Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to this year's Oscars. I'm Nick Werkraut.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And today we have another fun episode that we bring to you every year. Last week, we talked about the best of 2024. And today, we'll be talking about everything that is to come in 2025. So it's our big movie preview. I'm excited for this. At the top, we'll give a little recap of the Golden Globe ceremony, which happened this past weekend, and how that will affect some of the other ceremonies coming up very soon and Oscar nominations coming next week. So we'll start with that, and then we'll get right into all the movies.
I love this episode. It's one of my favorites that we do every year. And part of the reason why I like it so much is because I think when we wanted to create this podcast, and even from our conversation that we had with our friends Connor and Dylan McDowell on the Wicked podcast, Entertainment Weekly was such a huge part of our growing up, I think, as, you know, budding cinephiles and just fans of movies in general. So I think when we initially created or had the idea for doing our movie preview, Entertainment Weekly was really, I think, in the back of my mind. So I love also that, you know, over the next few months, really, next 2 months, we're going to be talking pretty much exclusively about the Oscar race and 2024 movies in depth. So this is a nice little, I think, break from that and a way to get excited about some other new films that we'll have coming up this year. And like you said, we have a number of categories. We do that every year where we just go through and really break these movies down by where we might see them. Is it going to be at a festival? Do we think they're going to be in the Oscar race? We'll get into our favorite slash least favorite category of sequels and IP and comic book movies and things like that. But yeah, it'll be a really fun conversation that we have.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it's also fun looking back because in our first category, which is delayed from 2024, it's fun to look back at our old outlines and see what we went through and what carries over. And for the most part, last year, we covered almost every movie. Almost everything came out, which is really exciting and I think different as we've struggled through COVID and the strikes and not really knowing how the industry is going to release some of these, and maybe as we move forward, more of them will be more certain in terms of what we list today. But like I mentioned at the top, the Golden Globes aired this past Sunday. I think it was a great ceremony. I love Nikki Glaser hosting, and she has since been offered a 5-year contract, I believe. So we'll see if that happens. But what did you think of the ceremony? We'll get into all of our winners in a second here and talk about wins and losses of the night. But did you enjoy it more than previous years?
I definitely did. And I think a lot of that was because of Nikki Glaser as a host. I thought she was really funny. She's obviously a significant improvement from Joe Coy, who, if you remember that opening monologue, it was truly a what are we doing here situation. I thought she was funny. Her timing was great. The Ben Affleck joke was perfect. Same with Joker Foley Adu. I died, of course, at her joke about Timothy Chalamet's mustache.
Yes.
The eyelashes on his upper lip. That was great. So I really liked her. But I would say that as far as the production of the show goes, I did have some notes. First, I just don't really like when the presenters speak into that weird camera on the stage, and it's not like they're able to interact with or look out at the crowd. It seemed almost like the people behind them were confused or not paying attention, or it just felt like there was this disconnect. And I also don't need all of those moments of narration, like as we would see the winners and we would just see these fun facts or hear this voiceover instead of getting to hear the great Brutalist score, for instance, when that won 3, or here the Challengers match point part of the score. So I would say that overall, though, I did have a good time watching it. And a lot of that is because of some of the winners. I really did like quite a few of these winners. We'll get to what we disliked too. But I think this is really reflective of a new, more international voting body. And that's a big improvement from the HFPA, where it was really clear sometimes that they just wanted to award the most famous person in the room.
Yeah, going back to what you said about the presenters, my main thing with them is that I think some of the intros were very long, and these ceremonies are long on the whole, usually anyways. So I think we could have, you know, made things a little bit quicker. I get them having jokes and whatnot too. I loved Nikki Glaser's popular, and then like backstage via her earpiece, like cutting her off, saying this sucks. And then the cut to Ariana and Cynthia being like, no, my God, that was actually really fun. So I liked how she kind of brought in this Billy Crystal, Hugh Jackman energy that we get at the Oscars usually. But what you were saying about the voting body, that was what I had trouble with predicting the ceremony, because we also have all these critics prizes happening, like with international feature or director or even picture. All we imagine as light was winning across the board. And I'm like, you know, maybe they'll go for something like that in non-English, despite the Amelia Perez love and their record-breaking nominations. So I was wrong there, but I think we are moving in a different direction. And I think we saw that throughout the night. I overall am very pleased with these winners. Minor complaints, but if these translate to Oscar, which we can ask maybe at the end, I will be fairly happy. So let's talk about some of the big winners of the night. Amelia Perez was the big winner. Like I said, they had the most nominations going in, but they came away with four wins in the comedy musical category. They won picture, supporting actress for Zoe Saldana, non-English film, and song for El Mal. And The Brutalist on the drama side won picture, director, and actor for Adrian Brody. I think these are all big wins. Again, we going into the night, things were so up in the air. I thought maybe Conclave was winning picture. Then that ended up winning screenplay, which confused me. I need to ask you about what is happening in screenplay, because a big loss.
We need to talk about that.
For sure. Let's just start there. I want to like mention Anora's zero wins, but let's get to that later. What do you think of Amelia Perez, The Brutalist? And if you want to throw Conclave in there and say, does it have a chance at picture? It didn't win. It only won screenplay. What is happening in these big awards?
You know, I love when you ask what is happening. It's a repeated theme, I think, throughout our show, no matter what we're discussing. And here, it's a very fair point. Amelia Perez and The Brutalist, for me, represent the low lows and the high highs of the 2024 movie year. As I've mentioned several times on the show, I do not care for Amelia Perez, but what I have been doing this season is I've been saying, you know, because I think over the years, and now we've had our show for a number of years and have just been predicting so much and thinking about the Oscar race, I've been telling people, do not doubt the industry's love for this movie or European or international critics' love for this movie. I feel like it has been lurking. It's been really present. So I think even though Anora has been really dominant with the critics' bodies that we've seen, most of those are domestic. They're American groups. So when we look outside of that, when we look at the European Film Awards, when we look at this as a combined Best Actress winner at Cannes, and the people in the industry who have been, now this isn't an industry ceremony, the Golden Globes, but I'm just saying this in connection to the Oscars. When we look at the support for this movie from the industry, I don't think that it's really as polarizing as people are saying online. And I think we have to really take that into consideration. And this is the first piece of evidence that that might be true. So again, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just here to sound the alarm, potentially, that I think, you know, based on this, its presence here, its performance with the Guild so far, just showing up and being there, we're going to get a lot more information soon. I think this is, whether you like it or not, it's a big threat, a big contender. The Brutalist, though, is the opposite, really, for me, in that, you know, this is my favorite movie of the year. So I was really thrilled by these wins, I think, especially because there was a lot of doubt, both that I, as you know, Meryl says, I had such doubts. Specifically, I think about Adrian Brody, even though he makes perfect sense as a winner here with this voting body. But Timothée Chalamet is such an old Golden Globes pick, and he has been so in, you know, the press, and that movie did so well right during the voting window that I thought, you know, can he win? I stuck with my Brody prediction, and it paid off and he won, but it's an interesting one. And I think that one in particular really does show a shift from the old HFPA to the new Golden Globes. So I think that these two, Emilia Perez and The Brutalist, are definitely both big contenders. They both have a path to win picture, but so does Conclave. Like you mentioned, I really think it still does have a path, even though it just won screenplay. We've had films before who haven't won the picture prizes go on to win Best Picture at the end of the day. Everything Everywhere All at Once is a perfect example of this. The Banshees of Inisherin won that year and went home empty-handed at the Oscars. So there can be a shift, and I think that Conclave is poised to be a serious contender if it starts really performing well. I think it's a threat with SAG Ensemble. I think there are a number of places where it can really show that people in the industry like it. So I think it's still very much up in the air, but for me, it's down to those three films, which is crazy to say.
I feel less likely about Emilia Perez being in the top two or three for picture. I know this is our main barometer at this point, but I think the other big thing that Emilia Perez has going for it is Jacques Audiard handing over the mic to Carla Sofia Gascon for that final speech of the night. And she had a decent speech, and I think that will help her on her route to getting the actress nom or securing it. I know we both have her in there predicted right now, but I think that may help her chances in that race too. Let's talk about all of the actors' wins and the other wins of the night. So for actress, we had Demi Moore win in comedy musical, and Fernando Torres win in drama. For actor, like we mentioned, Adrian Brody, and then Sebastian Stan won in comedy musical for A Different Man. In supporting actor, we had Kieran Culkin for A Real Pain. And I'd mentioned previously Zoe Saldana for supporting actress. Screenplay went to Conclave. Score went to Challengers, to Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. An incredible win. Animated feature went to Flow, and the box office achievement went to Wicked, obviously. They were front and center all night, cameras flashing to them every other speech, it seemed. So I think we have some really exciting winners. Obviously, let's talk about Best Actress, our favorite category. I felt like going into the night, Demi Moore was going to take it, and I am almost 100% certain at this point she's taking the Oscar. She had an incredible speech. Fernando Torres, another incredible winner. I was cooking as they were introducing the category and talking about the nominees, and I was like, what if they just don't go with Nicole or Angie and they pick her because it's a more international body now? And they did. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I am so excited. I loved it. I love seeing the video of her mom back home.
That was so sweet.
Who was nominated and the whole family just cheering. Just a perfect moment. I would love to see her take that fifth spot in Best Actress at the Oscars. What do you think is happening there with her versus Nicole and Angelina? Do they have a chance of getting in still?
Well, so I think what was really interesting was before the Globes, Fernando Torres to me seemed pretty unlikely to pop in here. Highly unlikely she would get in at SAG, given Sandra Hüller couldn't even get in there last year. It's very, very American English language focused, and she didn't make the BAFTA long list. But I think things are starting to change because I think Sony Pictures Classics is really kicking it into high gear now that we've seen this win from Fernanda Torres, and voting for the Oscars is open. She's going on Jimmy Kimmel, and we know that Sony Pictures Classics knows how to run a campaign for their actresses. And I'm Still Here has a much better shot as a film at getting another nomination in international feature. Whereas, for example, their other contender, Tilda Swinton, who has been on the circuit, was probably the most excited for Fernanda Torres out of anyone in the room that I saw. She was thrilled. And that movie, The Room Next Door, is just not, as far as we know yet, just not really performing in the way that previous Almodovar films have. So it's possible, really, that Fernanda Torres could get in. Because Angelina, if she would, she also missed the BAFTA long list. If she would have gotten that moment at the Globes to give the speech, I would be more confident in predicting her. Now, Netflix is really good at getting nominations, and Angelina Jolie is a really famous person. But I do wonder if, because the Academy is more international now, if Fernanda Torres does have a real path to getting in. I think she really can potentially get that fifth spot.
And what about Nicole? Because she was nominated at the Globes, and I would love to see her there. But I also thought Angelina gave my favorite performance of the year. And Fernanda, I ranked that movie really high for the year as well. So it's these really strong films, strong performances. Mm-hmm. It's a tight race.
It really is. And another problem here, right, is that, like, I would love to see Nicole get in. I think she is fantastic in Baby Girl. She might actually have my vote. When I think about it, it's such a toss-up because I love so many of these actress performances. But in addition to those three, we have to consider another person who didn't even get nominated here, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who won the trifecta from critics. And that performance in Hard Truths is something that really is standing out to people. It's incredible. So you have so many good choices here. But I think what you said is right about Demi Moore. You called this a little while ago that she was winning, and I see it now. I really do. I think she needed this to do it, but her getting up there and making that speech, and this is a bold statement, pretty much solidified her SAG win, because that is the type of speech. And I was talking to people about it afterwards and talking to my family, and, you know, people outside of this, people who don't cover the Oscars or the awards race, they were all really excited for Demi Moore. Like, it was, that was kind of the big thing. It's like someone who gets this career achievement sort of award. It's like when she said in her speech that she was told she was one type of actress, she was told she could make one type of movie, and that she was thinking about giving it up, and now she's back and she's getting accolades for this. It's also such a daring, risky performance that actors, I think, will connect with. And on her side, she has that makeup and hairstyling potential win there. And that is not an ironclad stat, but it's pretty good. So I think it's hers to lose right now.
Yeah, it's just, I have that feeling that she, more than anybody else, has all of the right components to winning. Never been nominated before, you know, deserves it. Her movie, that is what this is about. It's about appreciating that in her age. And as much as I want Mikey Madison to get nominated, like I said, Anora came out with zero wins. She has been everywhere, but she's also a newcomer to the Academy. So I think with Demi Moore, it would be an incredible win too. We look at, I think Zoe Saldana is on her way as well. That feels pretty certain with Emilia Perez doing so well. Kieran Culkin has won absolutely every award possible, it feels like. So that is pretty certain. And then we have actor, you know, with Adrien Brody, who I would love to see win.
I think, and we'll talk about this next week on our episode, just about the power of this performance. But what's interesting about Adrien Brody winning here, and I think just the narrative overall about how he is still the record holder for the youngest person to win a Best Actor Oscar. And people, I think, are trying to make Timothée Chalamet the winner because it's a good narrative, right? To have someone who is up against the winner break that record. And I think if Timothée would have won here, I could see the rest of the groups falling in line. I could see him winning Critics' Choice and winning SAG and, you know, winning BAFTA even in an Austin Butler-like way, like he did for Elvis, and then the Oscar is his. But because Adrien Brody won here, again, that tells me, obviously, The Brutalist was strong with this group. I thought he gave a really great emotional speech about his parents and the connection, obviously, to the character and to the film. But what this does, I think, is it actually, oddly for me, opens up two pathways for him to win the Oscar, which is he just sweeps. Or I actually think there's room even for Colman Domingo to win something like SAG or Critics' Choice. And then we have a different kind of race where we have a performer who is really well liked by the industry and Colman Domingo, and in a movie that isn't as strong, possibly. So that becomes also interesting. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think this is locked up for Adrien Brody. I actually feel more confident, oddly, in Demi Moore, which I wouldn't have said weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I think actor is a little bit more in flux.
I am holding out hope for Colman Domingo. I think he is set up perfectly. I don't think this season so far has assured me that that is what's happening yet in terms of him potentially winning. He was nominated last year for Rustin. It would be a perfect time to award him. You know, I would say that he was deserving last year of winning too. So maybe voters will agree and say, oh, he's up here again and people love him a lot. He's a very genuinely happy and friendly person. Sing Sing being re-released the day that nominations are announced will also be, I think, an important thing in terms of keeping that movie out there and getting more word of mouth to voters, to the general public. So I'm hoping that can happen, but I agree with your statement about actor. Any other big comments you want to make from the night? I know you really liked Flo. I think that was a little bit of a surprise to me over The Wild Robot.
Well, I love Flo and The Wild Robot, so I really would have been happy with either, honestly. I still do think that The Wild Robot will take the Oscar. I think that this was just indicative of this voting body, but once it expands and we see the love for The Wild Robot potentially getting into right song and score, those are both still possibilities for it. I think that it will have more of a broad reach maybe than Flo will, and I do think it can still take it. One thing I do want to talk about, because you teased it and maybe we can end here, is screenplay. Because I kind of am ready to make a bold prediction and I'm curious what you will think of it.
Oh boy.
So it's so strange, right, that Anora didn't win anything here. And we've been talking about for a while now with Anora, its path to picture is original screenplay, actress for Mikey Madison, and picture. So once you take away, if you don't think Mikey Madison's winning actress, you think it's Demi Moore, okay, then suddenly it's just screenplay in picture. We haven't had that happen since Spotlight, which also notably was goose-egged at the Globes. But this doesn't feel like that kind of movie. So then you start thinking of all these different scenarios. And then I started thinking, you know, what if Anora isn't the screenplay winner? What other movie here, if that loses to Conclave in this random, like, okay, here's one win for Conclave, which is, I think it is our adapted screenplay winner. I think that is going to happen. But in original, what if it's The Substance?
Yeah.
The one screenplay it can, and it's very, very out there in a way that I think will make voters say, that's original, that's new, that's audacious. I like the movie. I want to vote for it here.
My thing in original screenplay is I have this weird feeling that A Real Pain has great potential based on these performances, both Kieran winning, but Jesse Eisenberg winning certain prizes as well. He was nominated for comedy musical at the Globes. I thought maybe he would win there. But I think that is also a screenplay that Academy voters will love.
Mm-hmm.
I agree about The Substance. We had clips of that released online in terms of how crazy that script was written. So I think that's definitely a possibility too. With the Nora potentially missing all of these places, now I'm thinking, you know, will Sean Baker even get into director as a nominee? And, you know, maybe Coralie Farjah is higher up there than we think. She's not 6 or 7. Maybe she's 4 or 5.
I have both of them in director right now. I do think Sean Baker will get in. I do think a lot of filmmakers like the movie. I read that IndieWire article where they interviewed quite a few directors, and Anora was mentioned so much throughout that. So there is, I think, love in the industry for it. I think this is just one case, one night where it went really poorly for them. But yeah, I think they'll both get in, actually. I almost feel like Edward Berger, oddly, is more vulnerable in director.
I can't decide if it's Berger or Odiard that's more vulnerable. But they're in my 4 and 5 spots right now.
I'm sorry. I think he's getting in. Odiard.
Like you mentioned earlier, I think some of this does come down to the crafts and seeing this perform in other categories. And we will be seeing that a lot starting this week. So a lot of those nominations from different bodies are starting to come out. So by the time this episode airs, we had the Motion Picture Sound Editor nominations released on Monday. We have the Cinema Audio Society, so that's sound mixing. That was Tuesday. SAG and DGA nominations came out Wednesday. The Art Directors Guild and the American Society of Cinematographers, those nominations all came out yesterday on Thursday, and we have the Cinema Eye Honor Ceremony, so that's documentary related, on Thursday. Out today is PGA, so that'll tell us maybe how picture's going. And then coming on Saturday, our favorite ceremony, the AARP Movies for Grownups Awards, that's happening. So it's just, this is that time. And then Oscar nominations, like I also said before, coming out next Sunday. I think these will start to show us which path we're leading on. We've kind of opened up a few today, and these Golden Globe winners are just the start of that.
I can't wait. It's going to be an action-packed few weeks, and I'm so excited to break it all down once we get into our contender series.
So let's start with some that were delayed from 2024. Some are still TBD, so we won't be mentioning everything, but starting out with one that has changed its release date now 2 times. So it was supposed to come out last March. It moved to January of this year, and it now moved to April 18th. This is Mickey 17, directed by Bong Joon-ho, his follow-up to Parasite. So I'm very excited for this. I actually read the novel written by Edward Ashton. It has a different title, Mickey 7, but I read this recently, and I think this will be a fun adaptation, especially coming from him. So it stars Robert Pattinson in the lead role, and then Steven Yeun, Naomi Aki, Toni Collette, and Mark Ruffalo in supporting performances. And Rob plays Mickey, and it's his 17th iteration. He's known as an expendable, and he's used by this company to go on a dangerous mission to colonize an ice planet. And if he dies, they can bring his body back. So that's where the 17 comes in. But this should be fun. I think the release date is maybe showing us that we should have fun with this movie and not necessarily be predicting everything again that we're mentioning today.
Right. And I think a lot of those delays and the reshuffling around the release date is because David Zaslav does not know what he's doing. This is a Warner Brothers movie, and I don't want him to squander 2 films this year coming from some of our best auteurs, Bong Joon-ho, and later we'll talk about Paul Thomas Anderson. But have you seen the trailer for this yet? I finally saw it in a theater. It actually played before I saw Phantom Thread on New Year's Day.
I've seen most of it. I kind of like watch and don't watch. I want to be a little surprised on what he does, but I do know like what happens throughout the movie. So I'm also curious with what they'll show or not show. There is a controversial, I will say, like threesome that happens in the book.
Well, you know, we know Robert Pattinson would not shy away from that. I think he is a very adventurous actor and doesn't really have any limits. So, and I'm saying that also because watching the trailer, the voice that he's doing, unlike anything I've heard, and I remembered, it made me realize that he voiced the Heron in The Boy and the Heron. So, some of our greatest voice acting that we have. So, I'm excited to see this though. It looks like a wild sci-fi romp. And again, I think anything that Bong Joon-ho does is exciting now. And not just because of Parasite, but again, the fact that it's 2025 and it's been since 2019 that we've had a film from him, I think is great. And I can't wait to see this one. So that's a good segue into our next delayed film, which is rumored to be delayed again. I don't know how I feel about that. I am still going to say it's coming out this year because it does have a date, August 8th. This is our untitled Paul Thomas Anderson film. Depending on where you look, it's titled The Battle of Bacton Cross, also rumored to be an adaptation of Vineland. So he's going back into postmodernism like he did with Inherent Vice potentially. This is a big deal. $140 million production budget. He's finally working with Leonardo DiCaprio. A lot of people have been anticipating that collaboration, I think, for a very long time. Also stars Regina Hall, Sean Penn, Alana Haim, Teyonah Taylor. Great cast. A Johnny Greenwood score, always something to look forward to. And maybe most interestingly, I think, this is also shot on 35mm VistaVision. So VistaVision making a comeback, at least in our conversations and in the discussions right now, because of The Brutalist being shot in VistaVision. So I can't wait to see what Paul Thomas Anderson does here. This, I think, is just going to be a really major movie. And anytime PTA has a movie coming out, I just know that it's going to be my obsession for that film year. So I can't wait to see this. I hope that it does come out this summer. So we have this big summer release from PTA and company.
Yeah, I hope it's not delayed. I was kind of into the idea. You never know what to get from a PTA movie, but the Vineland book is all about, in very rough terms, like hippies not liking Richard Nixon and his politics. And, we have parallels to that today. Very curious with a filmmaker like him making such a bold statement and with these actors, but I think that would be a really exciting movie. So I'm hoping this is still coming out this year and that we're talking about it in the fall. Another movie I had to mention, which is also TBD, is one we mentioned last year called Holland, Michigan, and is now apparently titled Welcome to Holland. It's directed by Mimi Cave and stars Nicole Kidman and Matthew McFadden. But I had to mention for Nicole, especially after Baby Girl, it sounds, in the same realm of things. So that's exciting. But it's a thriller centered on a woman who suspects her husband is cheating and enters into an affair of her own before learning her husband's true dark secret life. So erotic thriller-esque would be exciting, especially with her. And I think as she's done more and more projects recently, working with a female director here again just shows how committed she is to pushing film forward. And that's what we love most, I think.
I think so too. Yeah, she's really dedicated to making sure people in Hollywood, specifically women, have work, whether it's something like Baby Girl that is loosely in the Oscar conversation, or even a TV show where she's wearing a number of bad wigs. We love everything that Nicole Kidman does. But I think, yeah, you're right. This is really exciting. And again, the idea of those two actors being in some sort of erotic thriller is really exciting. I actually think they'll be a great pair. Next up, we have F1, which is scheduled to come out on June 27th. So this is our birthday movie this year. We always have that end of June release. This is it. This is directed by Joseph Kosinski. It's his follow-up to Top Gun Maverick, which of course was a major, major success. In this film, Brad Pitt's character is a Formula One driver who comes out of retirement to mentor and team with a younger driver. And this also stars Kerry Condon and Javier Bardem. I think this is going to be a really big movie. It has been in production for quite a while. So I think, you know, with Brad Pitt at the center of it, also being about a very popular kind of in vogue sport right now, F1, I think this will be a pretty big deal. It is going to be an Apple release, though, so I'm hoping that they give it a proper theatrical rollout, because I think this could make a lot of money.
And what was really cool was that they filmed this during the 2023 British Grand Prix, and they actually built a station in between, I believe, the Mercedes and Porsche stops. So they were like in on the action, which I think will add to just the intensity of the movie, and especially one by Joseph Kaczynski. I think we'll be talking about this come Oscar season, especially with Top Gun having won Best Sound and been up for other crafts. I think he's going to take it there and just give us an incredible experience. So I'm excited for this. I may be going on my birthday to see it.
Oh, I was just going to say, when you described that, that was a really cool fact about them really getting in on the action and building that. Mm-hmm. I just, of course, thought to myself, oh, that's a future production design contenders topic that we'll have.
Yeah. Next, we have Death of a Unicorn. This will be released by A24. There is a trailer out. I've seen it in the theater. It's about a father-daughter duo who hit a unicorn with their car and bring it to the wilderness retreat of a mega wealthy pharmaceutical CEO. That father-daughter is played by Jenna Ortega and Paul Rudd. Also Richard E. Grant, I believe he's the CEO, but it turns into like this horror movie where the unicorn starts killing everybody and it's not actually dead. It's just, I don't know what to make of this, but it could be really fun.
I think this looks fun too. I just watched the trailer. I actually completely forgot, as we discussed before we started recording, I forgot that we discussed this movie last time that it was delayed. But I am looking forward to it based on the trailer. The next one we have, I think we should keep a tally of how many times, how many years now we've discussed this movie on our movie preview special. It's Terrence Malick's Jesus movie, The Way of the Wind. We're hoping, the people are hoping, for a Cannes premiere. This apparently retells and chronicles several episodes in the life story of Jesus through several parables. Feels like something that Malick could be working towards, more like The Irishman than, let's say, Megalopolis. So I hope we will finally get this, because I really do want to see it. Malick is a director with extremely high highs and low lows for me, maybe more than any other director when I think about it. So,
oh my gosh,
we'll see. Because, like, The Tree of Life, I think, is a perfect movie and potentially one of the best of the century so far. And then we have something like Song to Song.
I don't think I even saw that.
I don't know how you would feel about it, but that's my Malick.
Not great.
That's the Malick landscape.
I just love the fact that Mark Rylance is playing Satan. So
amazing.
That
yes.
Could be campy. It could be really good. So we'll see. There are a few potential Cannes releases that we'll talk about later today. But let's get into our next section. This is one we sometimes dread every year, our IP section. So remakes, reboots, and sequels. I'm going to just list a ton of movies, probably 20 plus movies. And then maybe at the end, if anything like really intrigues you or something you want to talk about, let's do that, because there is just everything from horror to animation, and it's a lot. I think a lot of these will be big blockbusters and will make a lot of money, but let's see. So they're mostly in order of release date. Starting in February, Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy. This is the third movie in that saga. Captain America, Brave New World, a trailer I've seen too many times in theaters already. Paddington in Peru, this is his third adventure. Snow White, the live-action remake with Rachel Zegler.
You can't forget Gal Gadot.
Oh, see, I may have. Funnily enough, The Way of the Wind wasn't our only Jesus movie. And this may not be the only sequel, but The Passion of the Christ, Resurrection, is coming out on Good Friday. This is a wild trailer. If you look it up, I believe it's real and not fan-made, but this could be a part one of part two. Ballerina, we mentioned last year. This is in the John Wick realm with Ana de Armas. Final Destination, Bloodlines, another one of those coming in May. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Lilo and Stitch, another live-action remake. Dirty Dancing 2, Superman with David Cornsweet. How to Train Your Dragon, 28 years later. I Know What You Did Last Summer. Not a remake, it's a sequel with the same name. That kind of blows my mind. That's in July. Jurassic World Rebirth. Megan 2.0. Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery. The Fantastic Four, First Steps. Freakier Friday, The Conjuring Last Rites, Saw 11, Downton Abbey 3. Maggie Smith isn't in it, sadly, and I don't know if I'm going to go see that, but they filmed after she passed last year. Tron Ares, Zootopia 2, Wicked for Good, and last but certainly not least, Avatar, Fire and Ash. So what do we think about this list?
I don't even know where to begin. You know, the first place I think I'm just going to jump in here is Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, because this has a stacked cast. It has Josh O'Connor playing a hot priest with a neck tattoo, ? Daniel Craig, of course, reprising his role. And we mentioned, I know, on our last episode, the Actors on Actors with Daniel Craig and Josh O'Connor, but they just had such a good rapport. And a lot of that was from filming this movie. Kaylee Spaney is also in it. So I think it's going to be really fun. I really like those movies as just fall releases, holiday releases. And I hope that, again, this is a Netflix release, but I hope that it gets a good theatrical run because these are pretty popular, and I remember when the last one came out, it was selling out just the few screenings that it had, so I'm hoping it can get a good theatrical run too, in the same way that I said about F1, but I would say of those on the list, and then of course there are some funny ones too, but that's probably the one I'm looking forward to the most.
I'm really looking forward to that one, but that's also when Netflix botched that release and that the screenings were doing so well and they didn't change their release plan. They didn't add screenings. So it's like, will they do that again? Hopefully not. Hopefully they learned and changed things. But yeah, that one could do very, very well. My most anticipated, which is crazy, and this is a lot of movies, but I think it's Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just had such a good time during Dead Reckoning, part one, whatever it was called or is called now. And the fact that this could be Tom Cruise's last movie in the Mission Impossible saga is crazy. Like, will he have an ending like Daniel Craig as James Bond in No Time to Die? It's kind of exciting. Like, will I cry in this movie?
Probably.
Right? Probably. It's going to be action-packed, and yeah, I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I'm excited for this too, and I think it also has potential to play at Cannes out of competition in the same way that Top Gun Maverick did or that Elvis did. Sometimes there are those big, like, end of May or early summer releases that will play out of competition at Cannes. I think Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny did too. So I think there's a possibility for that there, which would be really cool. And yeah, I mean, these movies are always so much fun. And I did watch the trailer for this one and I was getting really excited for this movie. The score is always great. And I don't know, just seeing Tom Cruise running around and jumping off of things, like, we can't complain. Another just funny one. Obviously, we have to be excited for Freakier Friday. starring Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan, because we've covered Freaky Friday on After Dark, but just the idea too of how their careers have evolved since Freaky Friday, which was 20 years ago at this point. Thinking of, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis, now she's really at the center of every award season. She just makes herself known. She has an Oscar. Yeah. She's, I think, one of our, I don't even know the word to describe Jamie Lee Curtis as a Nepo baby, but she's around. And Lindsay Lohan has had this kind of full career renaissance. She's making a comeback, even if it is just in those like Netflix holiday movies, like we've talked about a little bit. I think this will be really fun. I'm excited to see them together again and to see how this story continues, even if I'm sure it will be silly, but I think it'll be fun.
I totally agree. And then we end the year with Wicked for Good right before Thanksgiving. That's all we're kind of talking about right now. So I don't know if we have much to say. We'll be Act Two. I'm curious if it'll be a little shorter just from what happens in that, or if it'll be as long. But also around Thanksgiving, we have Zootopia 2, the original one, the Oscar for animated feature in 2016. So potential that we'll be talking about that throughout the next Oscar season. And we surely will, if you already want to put bets on Avatar, Fire and Ash winning visual effects next year. It's possible that's out late December. And the following two sequels, depending on how this one does, if it makes another $2 billion, will be out in 2029 and 2031. I don't even want to think about how old I'll be then, but James Cameron has said that all three of these sequels, so 3, 4, and 5, will be roughly 3 hours long. So get ready.
You know, I feel like we've already talked about a number of our potential visual effects nominees for next year. Mission Impossible, Avatar. So our next category, I really like what you called this. It's very fun. Chills, frills, and thrills. So a lot of thrillers or horror movies here. Some of our early releases this year, we have The Monkey. That's coming out in February. This is Osgood Perkins' follow-up to Long Legs, which was a huge success for Neon. And it stars Theo James, Elijah Wood, and more. This story revolves around twin brothers, Bill and Hal, who find their father's old monkey toy in the attic, and a series of gruesome deaths start. The siblings decide to throw the toy away and move on with their lives, growing apart over the years. The trailer for this also looks pretty good, I think, but so did the Long Legs trailer, and I think people had mixed reactions to the actual film, so we'll see if this is, you know, if this lives up to Neon's marketing machine.
That's what I'm worried about, is we have had the trailer so far in advance, and that's what they did with Long Legs, with teasers and that whole marketing campaign, and I was pretty disappointed by that. I'm surprised we didn't mention that on our episode last week, but maybe Osgood Perkins can do something different with a Stephen King adaptation. I read the synopsis of that story and what happens, and it could be exciting. The trailer is a Red Band trailer, so it's pretty gruesome and bloody. We'll see. I have mixed feelings about this. But our next movie, not the only Soderbergh movie we'll be getting this year, we also have Presence coming out fairly soon, but this stars Cate Blanchett and Michael Fassbender, also Tom Burke and Marissa Abella, as spies. And this looks very fun. But the synopsis, when intelligence agent Catherine Woodhouse is suspected of betraying the nation, her husband, also a legendary agent, faces the ultimate test of whether to be loyal to his marriage or his country. This sounds like a follow-up to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and I feel like we will be sat for Cate Blanchett in a black wig.
Yeah. Also, when I was watching this trailer, I thought to myself, okay, our hottest characters list is complete for next year. Just this whole cast. But yeah, I'm excited to see this sort of power play between Cate Blanchett, who's one of my favorite actresses, and Michael Fassbender, of course. And then Tom Burke and Marissa Abella are two of my favorites too. I think of rising stars in the UK. Marissa, of course, we're going to forget Back to Black. We're going to focus on Industry, where she's amazing as Yaz. And Tom Burke, of course, from The Souvenir and Mank. And Kate and Tom are also starring in a West End production of The Seagull, the Chekhov play, this February. So lots of exciting stuff on their plates.
Yeah.
The next one we have is called Opus, which I thought sounded really interesting. This is about a young writer who is invited to the remote compound of a legendary pop star who mysteriously disappeared 30 years ago. Surrounded by the star's cult of sycophants and intoxicated journalists, she finds herself in the middle of his twisted plan. This is directed by Mark Anthony Green and stars perhaps the most interesting pair we'll talk about today, John Malkovich and Io Edebiri. Just, I don't know, but it's intriguing for sure.
I have zero idea what to make of this. Is it funny? Is it dramatic? Maybe both? You never know. I love Io, though, so this could be one to definitely watch. The next one we have is Drop, coming out April 11th. There's no trailer yet, but it's about a widowed mother's first date in years that takes a terrifying turn when she's bombarded with anonymous threatening messages on her phone. Stars Megan Fahey and Brandon Sklenar. He was in It Ends With Us. The poster has her eyes on it, and it looks very fun. This is a Blumhouse release, so it will be scary. I feel like it's giving Date Night or Game Night, but scarier. And I hope this is good, because I really liked her in The White Lotus.
Yeah, I really liked her in that, too. She actually would have been my pick for all of the awards that season. I thought she was really great. And yeah, this sounds good. I'm excited for that. We also have Sinners coming out, which is expected to be released April 18th. There is a trailer out for this. Trying to leave their troubled lives behind, twin brothers return to their hometown to start again, only to discover that an even greater evil is waiting to welcome them back. This is directed by Ryan Coogler and stars Michael B. Jordan, Hailee Steinfeld, and Jack O'Connell. Anything, I think, with Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan, they're a great pair together. I think a great director-actor duo. And I'm excited that Ryan Coogler's out of the Marvel universe. He's doing something different. So, yeah, and the trailer for this, it looks really fun. So,
yeah, it's pretty intense. Our next one is The Housemaid, which just started filming with Sydney Sweeney, Amanda Seyfried, and Brandon Sklenar again. It follows a struggling woman, played by Sydney, I believe, who is happy to start over as a housemaid for an affluent elite couple. And it's directed by Paul Feig. So I'm getting like a Simple Favor vibe from this, which I really liked. We also have that sequel, I don't think coming this year, but probably in the works. I'm maybe hesitant, but I like this casting for sure.
Yeah, I think this is fun casting. And I think, as you know, I would have given Blake Lively an Oscar nomination for A Simple Favor. So if we can get a fun performance like that from either Sydney Sweeney or Amanda Seyfried, I'm in.
Yeah, I agree.
Next, we have Begonia. This is another collaboration between Yorgos Lanthimos and Emma Stone. Also Jesse Plemons, another collaboration for the two of them after Kinds of Kindness. This film is about two conspiracy-obsessed young men who kidnap the high-powered CEO of a major company, convinced that she is an alien intent on destroying planet Earth. I think this will also probably make the festival rounds next year, considering it's another Lanthimos-Emma Stone collaboration. You know, I'm a bit tired of these, but they're also probably here to crush some awards hopes and dreams. Hopefully not Glenn Close's for The Summer Book. I'll just say that.
You saying this is a Kinds of Kindness reunion has me very on edge. It's probably my least anticipated after that movie. I think this is when we're getting Emma Stone having shaved her head, and I don't know anymore. This summary I guess it could be hit or miss. I'll just say that. The Running Man, next. Its expected release is on November 7th. This stars Glenn Powell, Katie O'Brien, Lee Pace, Michael Cera, and more. So it's based on a Stephen King 1982 novel directed by Edgar Wright. And in the novel, it's actually set in 2025. So coming out this year is...
Oh, wow. That's so weird. That's very
kind
strange.
Of exciting.
Yeah.
Right? It's this dystopian book about a game show called The Running Man. And during it, they have people chased by murderous hunters across the world to win money. So I think this is right up our alley. I need to read more Stephen King. And the fact that they're still making movies, that this was adapted previously with Arnold, but I believe it's going to be a bit different. But movies by him just keep coming out. So I'm excited, especially for Glenn and Katie on the big screen.
Yeah, I love that you called out Katie O'Brien last week, because I just watched Love Lies Bleeding before the end of the year and really loved her performance. So I'm excited to see her here and think she and Glenn Powell actually be a great on-screen pair. But yeah, you making the comment about Stephen King, he's so prolific, because I just realized I've read a lot of Stephen King, but we've discussed two adaptations today and I haven't read either of them. So I'm going to have to do some reading to catch up before these come out. But yeah, the fact that it's set in 2025 is really interesting. And that makes me think of the tragic fact that Children of Men is set in 2027. So good luck, everyone.
Interesting.
Next, we have Marty Supreme. So Josh Safdie is directing this. Timothée Chalamet stars in this. You've maybe seen the set photos of him. This movie is the reason for the mustache that he currently has. So this the origin story of the mustache is Marty Supreme. Gwyneth Paltrow also stars Fran Drescher and Sandra Bernhard as well. And this is about Marty Reisman, the table tennis player who started as a hustler and ended up winning 22 major titles. I'm really excited for this. We'll find out. I mean, because we have a potential Josh Safdie movie and a Benny Safdie movie coming, but it's interesting when pairs of directors split, like the Coens, for instance, to see, you know, what their individual styles are. But I'm curious what Josh Safdie can do with Chalamet's manic energy that we see sometimes. I think they will be well suited for each other. I'll say that. And Timmy's the king of Christmas releases, because A Complete Unknown is doing so well. Wonka did really well. And this is going to be another Christmas release. So it's his season.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this. Fran Drescher is playing his mom. So that energy, give it to me. Like you said, Benny Safdie. So their last movie together was Uncut Gems. And up to that point, they had directed everything together. So they've kind of gone their own routes and now trying out solo careers. And Benny Safdie's movie is called The Smashing Machine. It stars Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt, but The Rock will be playing Mark Kerr, a mixed martial arts and UFC champion. Did you like The Wrestler? I wasn't a big fan of that movie, and this is what it's giving to me from the stills. Maybe I'm just categorizing all wrestling movies as the same, but I don't know. It's Safdie, and maybe he can turn this into something that is really enjoyable and exciting.
Brave of you to ask me how I feel about a Darren Aronofsky movie. The Wrestler, not my favorite. I know even the Aronofsky naysayers say it's his best film, but I think his best movie is Mother. That's my controversial take.
Also, my brain, I was thinking of that movie, but also envisioning another, The Fighter.
Oh gosh.
Maybe
David
not
O. Russell,
by another great
the Jennifer
director.
Lawrence connection. Which segues perfectly into our next movie, which I can't wait for, Die My Love. This is directed by Lynn Ramsey and stars Jennifer Lawrence, Robert Pattinson, Lakeith Stanfield, and Sissy Spacek. Great cast. And this is about a new mother in the French countryside who develops postpartum depression and enters psychosis. This is so exciting for me. Definitely one of my most anticipated releases. I think Lynn Ramsey is a great underrated director, and I love that Jennifer Lawrence in particular is working with her, because I think it will access, I think, some of her strongest skills as an actress. I love when she does indie dramas. And I mean, she's a great comedic actress too. I loved her in No Hard Feelings too. But I feel like this is a great collaboration. And also, she and Robert Pattinson are so strange, both of them. So I can't wait to see what they come up with. And our DP here is Seamus McGarvey, who shot this in 35 millimeter and Academy ratio, inspired by, I'm so glad you put this note in here, two of my favorite movies ever, Repulsion and Rosemary's Baby. This is thrilling. This made me so much more excited for this movie, and my anticipation was already very high.
Yeah, the inspiration with horror films and this cast and working with Jennifer Lawrence's production company, there's a lot to love. And tackling, I think, a difficult topic, but one that isn't really covered much, especially in like big Hollywood films. So I'm excited for this. The next movie is Highest to Lowest. In typical Spike Lee fashion, he's remaking Kurosawa's High and Low, so that's where the title comes from. But this will star Denzel Washington, Jeffrey Wright, Ice Spice, and A$AP Rocky. So I'm, you know, the first two actors, very good. We'll see how the second two are. I don't know if we've seen A$AP Rocky in a movie, but definitely not Ice Spice. This is an A24 release, also with Apple TV Plus. DP Matthew Libatique is returning, and it wrapped last year in May. So I'm hoping this comes out. I'm wary of Spike Lee adaptations. He remade Old Boy, and I didn't even see it, so I probably shouldn't be critiquing, but that original is just highs of highs, and we will see if this is high or low.
Well, I have seen Spike Lee's Old Boy, and you can go ahead and give that the skip. I understand actually why you'd be concerned, and I think that will be the concern of people if they're worried about this movie, is just because of the remake and because of Old Boy. But I just have to be excited for this because it's another Spike Lee movie starring Denzel Washington. And yeah. I do love High and Low.
Love. Love this movie.
Yeah, it's such a good movie. So when you think about someone remaking it, I'm never, you know, I never really know what to think of remakes of classic masterpieces. But I am still excited for this.
You just don't we'll have see. To touch Kurosawa. I understand, you know, loving him as a master of film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we'll see.
Our next one is called After the Hunt, directed by Luca Guadagnino. This stars Julia Roberts, Iowa Debbery, Andrew Garfield, Michael Stuhlbarg, and Chloe Sevigny. So a few people there that he's worked with before, and new collaborators as well. And this is about a college professor who is forced to grapple with her own secretive past after one of her colleagues is faced with a serious accusation. Sign me up. I am so ready for this, especially because it's been compared to Tar.
Oh, wow.
And this being Julia Roberts' Tar, and I love Julia Roberts, so I am here for it.
I'm curious what spin Guadagnino will put on it as well. Maybe it'll be more like Bones and All.
We also have another Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross score coming.
So our last one in this category, we have Eddington, directed by Ari Aster. It revolves around a couple stranded in a small New Mexico town during the pandemic. Initially welcomed, the town takes a sinister turn by nightfall. And Joaquin Phoenix will also star, reuniting them after Beau is afraid. He portrays a sheriff with bigger ambitions, and it also stars Emma Stone, Pedro Pascal, and Austin Butler. I think it's an eclectic cast for sure. We'll see where this goes. He's kind of done a little bit of everything, so I'm curious if this will be more like Beau or something more sinister, like the description said, like Hereditary.
It's interesting because what I thought about when I was, thinking about Eddington is how many directors want to make a Western, or after they have success with a particular genre, they try to pivot into, making a Western, making a neo-Western. And I thought about Jordan Peele and how much I loved Nope. Nope is my favorite Jordan Peele movie, and that was just such a big summer release that you and I both really liked. And here it feels like Ari Aster, after the three features that he's made so far, he wants to do something in this space, which is interesting. When I saw Beau Is Afraid, Emma Stone did the Q&A with Ari Aster and was just singing his praises. So I'm curious what the two of them do together. And I think this will be more like Beau Is Afraid than Hereditary. I'm gonna guess that right now.
Uh-oh.
Our next category, so we have a lot here. So this is just what we think could be maybe headed for at the Oscars next year or festival season in particular, things that are maybe going to Cannes or Telluride or have already been announced to go to Sundance, but movies that we think we might be talking about next year. The first one is called Stitches by Alice Wincour. It stars Angelina Jolie, and she plays a fashion designer during Paris Fashion Week. When this was announced, I was just excited that Angelina was going to be starring in it because I really enjoy her, and we both really liked her in Maria.
Especially another Paris fashion movie after Maria. We talked about the costumes from that movie and how we want everything. So this could play into costumes at the Oscars, maybe makeup and hair, who knows? But yeah, I do love Angelina coming back. I don't love where she's headed in the Oscar race, but we
I
will see
know.
about that. Our next movie is Sentimental Value, directed by Joaquin Trier, starring Renata Reinsve, Stellan Skarsgård, and Elle Fanning. So I love the reunion of Joaquin and Renata from The Worst Person in the World. But this is about Nora and her sister Agnes, who mourn the loss of their mother while adjusting to the return of their father, a once celebrated filmmaker planning a comeback. Sign me up. This sounds amazing.
Yeah, I think so too. It reminds me of Bergman a little bit. It sounds like something that he would have done or been interested in. And yeah, I think this sounds really good. When I put the description in here for this one, I was like, "Oh, that's going to be definitely on my most anticipated list."
And Renata last year had two big movies, A Different Man and Armand. I don't know if you've seen Armand, but she is just 100 times better, I would say, than in an American movie. And maybe that has to do with the script or some other factor. But Armand is in her native language, and it, especially that performance by her, blew me away. So if you haven't seen it, highly recommend.
She's so good in that. I agree. I totally agree. I didn't like her as much in A Different Man, but I really, really liked her in Armand. And I still have to see, she also had, was it Handling the Undead,
Oh,
the zombie
right.
movie? I haven't seen that yet, but I did really like her in Armand for sure. Next, we have The Bride, which I'm really excited for. This is coming out in September. Maggie Gyllenhaal wrote and directed this. This is her follow-up to The Lost Daughter, and it's inspired by The Bride of Frankenstein. It stars Christian Bale, Jessie Buckley, Penelope Cruz, your favorite Annette Bening. I did not know she was in this. Peter Sarsgaard, Jake Gyllenhaal, and more.
Wow.
I am really excited for this, especially, I think, just with what Maggie did with The Lost Daughter and her interest, I think, in literary adaptations and adapting stories about women and female characters. I feel like she's a really good fit for this. And it's also kind of a level up from something smaller scale like The Lost Daughter. So I'm excited to see what she does with it.
Incredible cast, bigger budget. Filmed in New York, like on location. I cannot wait for this. We have Bride of Frankenstein here, and then we have Frankenstein, directed by Guillermo del Toro, also coming. So we have some really good pairings this year. This stars Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi, Mia Goth, and more. This will be produced and released by Netflix. I'm excited because Guillermo brought us Pinocchio last. but he's done so many other live action movies beforehand. So I'm curious, like, where he takes this, if he melds the two.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking he hasn't done this already, right? That's what I was just thinking. I'm like, I think right now we're actually in a Universal Monsters Renaissance, I think, with these two Frankenstein movies coming out. We had not Dracula, but Nosferatu. And I feel like we're in a spot where people are getting really into monster movies. And I think directors are seeing them for what their purpose was, really, which was, yes, to entertain audiences, but also to shoehorn some key political themes, really timely themes of the moment, into these stories. So I think we're in a good spot with these. What do you think of Jacob Elordi's beard? Not to pivot from the serious to the silly a bit here, but have you seen the beard that he has for this movie?
This is what it's for.
Yes, this is what
I saw his debut in it, and it was not great.
Okay, we're on the same page. We're on the same page.
But I didn't know it was for this movie. That's not good.
I know. We have had two discussions of interesting facial hair for movies between Timothée Chalamet and Marty Supreme and Jacob Elordi and Frankenstein. But neither work for me. I'll say that.
The stash is funnier, I will say, with Timmy. I didn't know that was the reason for that either, but the little rat stash is really funny.
It's funny too, because the conversation this year of, like, can he be the youngest person to win, and he's making himself look 15 with that mustache. He doesn't even look 29.
I feel like he hates it too. I wonder if Elordi hates his beard.
No, see, I think Timmy is fully leaning into this trash stash look. Which makes it even funnier. I'm like, I know you've got to get rid of this, please. But I think he's leaning into it because filming is wrapped. He could get rid of that, but it is still lingering.
Oh, weird.
We'll see. Next, we have Hedda, which I'm also really excited for. This is written and directed by Nia DaCosta, and it's a reimagining of the Ibsen play, of course, starring Tessa Thompson. Another one of our directors this year, Helena Rein, loves this Ibsen play too. Ooh. And I mean, this is a big one of his plays. I mean, I do love quite a few of them, but this won the Olivier for Best Revival in 1992 and 2006, Tony nomination for Best Actress for Kate Burton in 2002, so major role. And after how good Tessa Thompson was in Passing, I'm hoping this can get her into the Oscar race.
I think I had her in my early Oscar predictions last year for this movie, and we weren't sure if it was coming out. So I'm also looking forward to this. I loved her in that movie as well. And she's especially in a period piece like this, a play adaptation. I think there's a lot that she can do well. So we'll be looking forward to this, hopefully talking about it throughout the Oscar season. The next movie, which is something when it won the TIFF Audience Award last fall, we were like, uh-oh, is this going to be up for Best Picture? What's happening? Which is usually what happens to those winners now. But this is for The Life of Chuck, coming out May 30th and distributed by Neon. This is the Mike Flanagan adaptation of the novella. He's directing Tom Hiddleston, Jacob Tremblay, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Karen Gillian, and more. So I'm curious if this will carry over, because it's kind of skipped a year and we'll have another TIFF Audience Award winner next year. Who knows? But this had some really high praise coming out of that festival.
Yeah, I think this is just one that, you know, because it won the Audience Award, we just have to, like, put a pin in that and say we will end up talking about it, just because a lot of people at that festival really liked it. And yeah, another, again, Stephen King. Another one to add to my to-read list. Speaking of my to-read list, we have Hamnet, which I have to tell you, I've been trying to read this book for a while and I keep putting it down and moving on to something else. But I am going to finish it before the movie comes out. This is, of course, a fictional story about the life of William Shakespeare and his wife following the death of their 11-year-old son, Hamnet. This stars Jesse Buckley, Paul Mescal, Joe Alwyn, and Emily Watson. And this was directed and co-written by Chloe Zhao and is adapted from the award-winning Maggie O'Farrell novel. I have seen a few stills from this, of Paul Mescal, and I think this is right in his wheelhouse. I feel like between him and Joe Alwyn in particular, this is exactly where they belong, connected to Shakespeare. So this will also, I think, be potentially a big one. I think it'll go to Telluride, if I had to predict today.
Jesse and Paul, I love that pairing, especially in this time period. This isn't the only Jesse Buckley movie. I think she has multiple on our list today.
Mm-hmm.
Our next movie, we don't really know much about. That's what happened with Asteroid City. So this is Wes Anderson's next ensemble film. It was co-written with Roman Coppola, who he writes frequently with. But I think his last full writing credit on this was for Moonrise Kingdom. He wrote the story for a few in between, including The French Dispatch, but this is The Phoenician Scheme. If that's a fake title, TBD, but this will obviously be a big movie. Once we hear more information about it, we will let everybody know.
Yeah, and the collaborators, like you were talking about, so the cast, Wes Anderson staples are here. Tom Hanks is back after Asteroid City. We have Scarlett Johansson, Benedict Cumberbatch, who was in the Oscar-winning short, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar last year. But perhaps most exciting to me, we have Riz Ahmed in this. I think it's a great choice.
Fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have, I think, one that's high up on our list called Materialists. This is Celine Song's follow-up to Past Lives, a film that we both really liked and saw together again over the summer. It stars Dakota Johnson, Chris Evans, and Pedro Pascal. And brief description here, a matchmaker's lucrative business is complicated when she falls into a toxic love triangle that threatens her clients. What is up with Celine Song and Justin Kuritsky's and love triangles? We've had Past Lives, Materialists, Challengers. This couple, what is it? I love it, but it's just funny.
They're giving us some sort of sign. I think they need help. We need to save them.
Yeah.
My best actress winner of 2024, Dakota Johnson. I'm sad. I haven't seen a lot of BTS for a lot of this category, so I'm intrigued. I had seen it for Marty Supreme and Timmy, but our next movie, I mentioned Merrily We Roll Along. This one is directed by Richard Linklater, so something by him in the meantime. This is called Blue Moon. It tells the story of Lorenz Hart's struggles with alcoholism and mental health as he tries to save face during the opening of Oklahoma, the musical. So it stars Margaret Qualley, Ethan Hawke, and Andrew Scott. Ethan, obviously a staple for him, been working with him for decades at this point, and Margaret and Andrew, newcomers for him, but very excited to see what they do.
Yeah, I can't wait for this too. And Margaret Qualley's been having such a great year. Andrew Scott, my best actor winner of last year for All of Us Strangers. So I think this is a really good group of actors, and thinking of the stories that Linklater likes to tell too, I think that this trio and their connection to theater and just the themes here, I think will be really cool. Our next one, we have A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey. This is directed by one of my favorites, Koganada, his follow-up to After Yang. And this is an imaginative tale of two strangers and the unbelievable journey that connects them. This has been described as a combination of The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and La La Land. So very curious about that. And it stars Colin Farrell, Margot Robbie, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and Brandon Perea. It's interesting because I have similar thoughts, I would say, about Materialists and A Big, Bold, Beautiful Journey, which is I just don't know how I feel about the possibility of chemistry between the two actors. Like Dakota Johnson and Pedro Pascal, I do not know how that's going to work. I'm really curious about that. But also Colin Farrell and Margot Robbie. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know why I'm hesitant about the pair. I shouldn't doubt Koganada because I really loved Columbus and After Yang. But it is giving me pause. So I'm curious. And I think the other piece of it here is the writer, Seth Rice, also wrote The Menu, which I didn't like.
That was why I put that in there. It's, you know, you have all these wonderful aspects. And I'm curious about Margot Robbie in Something by Koganada, but having a script like The Menu kind of turns it into something completely different than what I would have expected. So that's the potential red flag. But I trust Koganada.
Next, we're going to someone I don't really trust. This is Darren Aronofsky's Caught Stealing, starring Austin Butler and Zoe Kravitz. This follows a burned-out ex-baseball player named Hank Thompson, who unexpectedly finds himself embroiled in a dangerous struggle for survival amidst the criminal underbelly of 1990s New York City, forced to navigate a treacherous underworld he never imagined. I'm excited for Austin Butler and Zoe Kravitz. I'm going to go in with an open mind, but his movies are just really tough for me, especially after The Whale. You know how I felt about The Whale?
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know, though. I mean, maybe I think sometimes my issues with his movies come from him just, like, hammering home the point, making it really obvious. Maybe he won't do that this time. I don't know. And just from this description, I don't really know how he's going to involve Christianity like he usually does, which is another one of my things where I'm just wondering, why are you using so many Christian symbols? I don't know. Maybe it is Angels in the Outfield, too. We'll see.
I like the gritty feel of the description, but I'm kind of where you sit as well. Kind of mixed curious. Our next movie, I'm a bit more curious about. This is The History of Sound.
You don't say.
Also aiming for a Cannes premiere. This stars Josh O'Connor and Paul Mescal. The best of all worlds, really. And it's about a relationship between them, these two young men who meet in 1916 and then travel together in the summer of 1919 to record the folk songs of their countrymen in rural New England. I feel like this screams Sophia Simonello.
It kind of does. I think it really does. Just this little brief synopsis, these two actors. I'm afraid this movie may kill me.
Folk music, if they both sing.
If they're both singing, this time period too, I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. But for good reasons. Maybe this will also be on our hottest men of 2025 performances.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Next, we have Father, Mother, Sister, Brother. This is directed by Jim Jarmusch and stars Adam Driver and Cate Blanchett. Two more of my favorites. Again, anytime we can mention Cate Blanchett, we have to. And Adam Driver reuniting with Jim Jarmusch. Description here, estranged siblings reunite after years apart, forced to confront unresolved tensions and reevaluate their strained relationships with their emotionally distant parents. This sounds good. And I think it will be very strange considering this director's other films.
I do not align with Jim Jarmusch. I have tried over and over and over again. It just doesn't work. And, you know, Adam Driver and The Dead Don't Die. I love that he's paired with Cate Blanchett. And but the reviews after her in Guy Madden's Rumors, people were like, how did she get involved in something like this? So will they just be like too kooky to process, or what's going to happen here? I don't know.
I think it's going to be very kooky. And this also, perhaps most importantly, how did I forget, stars Charlotte Rampling and Vicky Creeps. So this is just a dream cast for me.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Our next movie is The Ballad of a Small Player, directed by Edward Berger. We're getting another one. We'll see how Conclave does this season. Starring Tilda Swinton, Colin Farrell, and Fala Chen. Description here, when his past and his debts start to catch up with him, a high-stakes gambler laying low in Macau encounters a kindred spirit who might just hold the key to his salvation. Sounds like a Paul Schrader film.
It does sound like a Paul Schrader film. You're right.
Maybe weird for Edward Berger then, but Again, we love our cast, so just strange ideas.
Yeah, I think, especially after Conclave and thinking of some of his work in German TV, it seems like Edward Berger is really interested in procedurals, thrillers, crime thrillers. Think like John Grisham novels. I feel like that is what Edward Berger really wants to do. So I think it's going to feel less Paul Schrader, potentially more Alan J. Pakula. I feel like that's probably what he's going
Ooh.
for. Next, we have a movie called I Want Your Sex. When this was announced, people were freaking out just because of the casting and what it's about. Because, yeah, we'll explain. This is directed by Greg Araki and stars Olivia Wilde, Cooper Hoffman, Charli XCX, Mason Gooding, Margaret Cho, and more. When fresh-faced Elliot, who's Cooper Hoffman, lands an exciting job for a renowned artist, icon, and provocateur, Erica Tracy, Olivia Wilde, his fantasies come true as Erica taps him to become her sexual muse. But Elliot soon finds himself out of his depth as Erica takes him on a journey more profound than he ever could have imagined, into a world of sex, obsession, power, betrayal, and murder. I
Wow.
don't know what to think of this pair, Olivia Wilde and Cooper Hoffman.
Wow.
Our young king, he just loves his age gap romances. He loves a woman a few years older than him.
I've been watching Greg Araki's films lately, and The Doom Generation, Totally Effed Up. I also have Nowhere on my Criterion Challenge for the year, so I'll be watching a few more. But this is exciting. He's a daring filmmaker and tackles material in very interesting ways. So I'm curious how he uses this. This is a really interesting idea compared to some of his older works that are more experimental. So exciting. Charli XCX. I
Yeah, and
funny.
Charli XCX, the actress, can't wait.
We do have the Sundance movie Rebuilding, where Josh O'Connor plays a cowboy and a father. This is about a wildfire that takes a family farm, and this rancher, played by Josh O'Connor, seeks a way forward. Very limited info, but this will be out at Sundance, and we'll be hearing about it very soon. Sundance ends in February, so end of January, keep your eyes open for that. Our next film, Anne Lee, is directed by Mona Fastbold and stars Amanda Seyfried, Thomasin McKenzie, Lewis Pullman, and Christopher Abbott. It's an epic fable about the religious leader Anne Lee, the founding leader of the Shaker movement, who is proclaimed by her followers as the female Christ and went on to build one of the largest utopian societies in American history. She was one of the rare female religious heads at the time, and her followers worshiped throughout exuberant song and dance. Very interesting, especially about a huge female central figure. Could be a big Oscar player.
Yeah, and Mona Fastbold coming off of The Brutalist to making an epic fable. That sounds really exciting. And Amanda Seyfried, this could be a huge role for her. And yeah, I think maybe we will be talking about it next Oscar season, or maybe she'll get some Best Actress prizes at festivals. And lastly, I have to mention this because I'm just so excited about Anemone. This is directed by Ronan Day-Lewis, Daniel Day-Lewis, and Rebecca Miller's son. This is Daniel Day-Lewis's return to acting. It also stars Sean Bean and Samantha Morton. And this is about family bonds between fathers, sons, and brothers that are explored as complex relationships unfold through personal journeys and generational conflicts. I am just excited to see Daniel Day-Lewis on the big screen again. Whether it's for 30 seconds or 30 minutes, I can't wait.
Hopefully more than 30 seconds.
Hopefully more than 30 seconds, but I will truly take what I can get. As I shared out into the world after I saw Phantom Thread, there are few better things in life than seeing Daniel Day-Lewis's beautiful face on the big screen. So I'm ready.
Yeah, it's exciting being directed by his son. Well, that was a lot of movies that we mentioned, as always. Lots to look forward to. in the coming year, and we'll see if anything gets delayed. Hopefully not. But big question, if you could see one of these movies mentioned today and it can't be the Paul Thomas Anderson movie, which would it be?
Oh no. You knew what I was gonna say. Oh my gosh.
Too easy.
And you know, it probably, I don't remember, but I bet I said that last year too when I thought it was coming out.
Probably.
So there's so many good choices here. I'm between two, but I'm actually gonna go with Die My Love, the Lynn Ramsey movie with Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. I feel like all of these elements that we talked about and the theme of the story, the influence of those early Polanski movies that I really like, I am very, very excited for this. So I will go with that one. What about you?
I have a few too. I am going to go with something a little different, maybe, but I'm going to go with The Bride. I love The Lost Daughter and cannot wait for an adaptation like this. Those stills of Christian Bale, we're probably going to be looking at this for makeup and hairstyling, but he looks wicked. And just a piece like this of this scale. Obviously, of course, Renette Benning, this isn't because of her, but that's definitely a plus. So, yeah, I can't wait for this one either.
Yeah, I think all good ones. There are a lot of exciting ones that we talked about today. So, looking forward to another great year of movies. And next time on Oscar Wilde, we'll have another 2024 movie review. We'll be doing a deep dive into Brady Corbet's The Brutalist. This has had quite a slow rollout, starting with festivals and then just doing a platform release in New York and LA, but it is expanding in January.
I can't wait. So, thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, and TikTok. You can find bonus content at patreon.com/OscarWilde and updated Oscar nomination predictions at oscarwilde.squarespace.com. And like we said, those nominations are being released next week. So, check those out and let us know what your favorite movies were from today and things you're most excited to hear Oscar nomination morning.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.